I believe that you lead the life that you're supposed to, and that you always get to the place where you're supposed to be in a way. And so there are many ways for you to get there, and it's never linear, but you always end up getting there.
Hello, I'm Jennifer. Welcome to Sebeni Ni Tama podcast, where we focus on all things wellness and soul healing. We touch on self-discovery and also literature, art, culture, activism, traveling as tools to elevate our mind. We promote self-love. I will be sitting with inspiring guests from all around the world to discuss their personal and powerful journey. I believe that representation matters. It is only by relating to someone's story that you can ponder about the tools necessary for you to make manifest the best of yourself. This conversation can easily be a representation of you. Thank you for joining us. Hello everyone, it's very good to have you back. It's been a while, I know, and we are here today with episode number 9 with Mona Lube. She is founder of an award-winning creative firm called Aya Consulting, which provides association individual clients with strategies and solutions in order to thrive. She is also an anthropologist who had a career in international development. We discuss everything related to arts, creativity, and culture. We also discuss a multicultural background and, of course, Aya Consulting, entrepreneurship. I started a very own project.
Hi, Mona. Thank you very much for being here today. I'm very excited about our conversation because I know that you've been working in international development in Africa, and then you went on to create your very own consulting agency, Aya, and we'll discuss all about it. How are you today?
Hi, I'm doing super well. Thank you for having me, Geneva.
I believe that we better understand someone's journey for getting to know their upbringing, their childhood. So I would like to understand a bit more about, to be more about your youth. I mean, let's say if you had to describe Mona, the little girl, in one word, what would it be and why?
Oh, wow. I've never been asked that question. I think I was curious. I think one of the best words to describe how I felt and, you know, how I acted was definitely curiosity. I was genuinely interested in knowing things. I would ask my parents tons of questions all the time. I was an avid reader from very early. I learned how to read thanks to both of my parents, but mostly my mom, early. So I would read everything, any and everything. So I would really devour lots of books and magazines and just anything that I could put my hands on. And I think partly because I wanted to know how the world worked from early, wanting to understand what the world was like, what societies were like, what it was like to have a role in society, to be someone, to have a voice, to do things. So, I would say that I was very curious. I was enthusiastic, but I was also mostly curious.
All right. And what about your household? I understand that you come from a pluricultural background. And you also traveled very young in different places. So can you tell me more about that, and how did it influence your becoming?
Yeah, I mean, I have a family history that's in a way atypical, and at the same time, I'm meeting more and more people who have very similar, personal backgrounds. I was born in Guadeloupe. My mom is originally from Guadeloupe, which is in the French West Indies, or that's how they call it. I'd rather say the French Caribbean. And my dad is originally from Cameroon and Ghana. But they met in Paris. So that's a good illustration of the way people have always traveled, you know, from the continent to Europe or from the Caribbean to Europe or to the United States, etc. Mm-hmm. And when they met, of course, they also traveled quite a bit. They went to the U.S., they went to Africa. So obviously, if you just, and let's not even talk about my friends or you know, my boyfriends or whatever, but I've always been very much interacting within spheres that have to do with the arts and culture. Mm-hmm. So growing up, this has been very much a part of, I guess, what I was given, what I was provided with. Mm-hmm. But I never felt as if I were an artist myself. And I never really felt the need to be one. Mm-hmm. So that's the interesting part. Not to say that I don't have any form of talent. I may. But not to the point where I wanted to lead that life. I wanted to be close to artists. I wanted to be close to art practitioners, but I didn't necessarily want to be an artist. Mm-hmm. What I was interested in, and again, I guess it sort of goes back to what I was saying earlier about being curious, is that I wanted to understand how artists work. What goes through this whole creative process, you mm-hmm. know? How does it start? How do you create and why? And I guess the sort of investigative mind of mine led me to anthropology. I wanted to understand how cultures, you know, mm-hmm. arise, emerge, what makes them distinctive and significant? How do they evolve over time? You know, oftentimes people think that cultures stagnate. And they're fixed, but they're not, because obviously human beings, social beings evolve and constantly change and adapt to the many realities that they have to face. And so I guess what really, really struck me as the right path for me was anthropology. When I was much younger, I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be a pediatrician because I love children. And I went to college, I studied medicine, but I realized my major was biomedical sciences, but my minor was anthropology. Mm-hmm. And it sort of changed over time where anthropology became major and biomedical sciences minor. You know, be it in the U.S. or in France, I felt that medicine as a discipline was not necessarily taking into consideration the stories of the people that we were supposed to care for. Mm-hmm. And I was interested in those stories. I wanted to know those stories. Life for me is very much a circle. And so originally mm-hmm. art was in sort of the foreground, or, you know, it was the story of my life. And of course I was trying out new things and wanting to see things. And then I came back to it, you know, mm-hmm. and it often happens that way. You are something or you like something, you sort of leave it on the side and then you go back to it. And so anthropology led me to perhaps having a certain mindset and a certain way of reading the world. Mm-hmm. And then arts and culture kind of brought me back to my essence, which is really what I do today. And so I incorporate a lot of my anthropological training in my work today. But I'm no longer just an anthropologist, which is the interesting thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you started your career in international development, you worked in Ghana?
No, actually, interestingly enough, my international development career started in Jamaica, not in Ghana. My research, obviously, was very much centered on Ghana, and I went to Ghana several times as a college student and then as a college graduate. But what I really started working as a consultant, a project manager, a program manager, it was in Jamaica. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because it was in Jamaica that I was caught up with, you know, my love for the arts and culture, because Jamaica is very much a land where the arts are so present I mean, everywhere. The first thing, I'll always recall that, because the first thing that really set Jamaica apart for me in terms of lived experience was the music.
Mm-hmm.
Every single day of the year, you hear music everywhere, all the time, from morning till evening. There's mm-hmm. music playing in, you know, on the streets,
nice.
In cars, mm-hmm. sound system everywhere.
Music is so part of life, yeah.
Yes. It's amazing. So there's an actual score to your daily life.
Yeah.
It's just music accompanies you in everything that you do. And so without realizing it, you kind of take in all of that. And then in terms of culture, a lot of the ideas and a lot of what I knew about Jamaica was not necessarily completely untrue, but it was very limited.
Yeah.
It's once you set foot on this tiny but just mighty island that you realize, you know, what the culture is like, what it's been like and how it's morphed. You know, a lot of people think Jamaica is this sort of laid back, really cool island, but it's a whole lot different than what you might imagine. You know, it's very conservative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's definitely divided. There are lots at stake, you know, in terms of colorism, in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, gender division and gender imbalances. It's very open and it's very controversial, and at the same time, it's also very, very limiting in many ways. So it's a contrast. It's a huge contrast, and it's extremely vibrant. I've never seen that anywhere else. There's just this vibrance and this dynamism that's amazing. But it's also something that I often say that you go to Jamaica as whoever, and you leave Jamaica as a different person.
Mm. You founded AYA Consulting in Jamaica, right?
I did. Mm. Because I felt that there was just so much fertile ground for a consulting agency or hub, you know, that would promote this artistic richness. I believe that you lead the life that you're supposed to, and that mm-hmm. you always get to the place where you're supposed to be, in a way. Mm-hmm. And so there are many ways for you to get there, and it's never linear, but you always end up getting there. And so I think it's not surprising that I didn't think of AYA, you know, on the continent, but I thought of it when I was in Jamaica.
Okay.
I think it was meant to be that way.
Tell me more about AYA. How and why did it got started, and was it a couple of people you met? Was it, how did it, the whole AYA Consulting firm got started over there?
I had worked for the Inter-American Development Bank as a project mm-hmm. manager for this educational project, which was island-wide. So it was huge. It was a nice. Whole lot of work, very intense. It was about making sure that students would be able to leave high school with a sort of solid background and would then be able to enter the world of work with a certain level in terms of literacy and numeracy, but also in terms of vocational skills.
Mm-hmm.
That was awesome. Wow. That was a mm-hmm. very interesting experience, but it was also extremely exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
And infuriating for many reasons. Lots of people who work in international development know what I mean when I say this, because
mm-hmm.
and I felt at some point that I was that the amount of work to push some of these obstacles
mm-hmm.
was too great. And that we were missing the point, that we were not serving the people that we needed to serve. Going in a direction that I didn't appreciate, the executive director of the place where I was based,
mm-hmm.
I love dearly, and who's become a very close friend of mine, left. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like I didn't want to stay anymore. Because we were very much a team, and without her, I just didn't feel like I would be in the right place. It just felt like it would be really, really complicated to continue to pursue some of the work that we had started. And so I decided to resign.
Okay.
And to take some time for myself, to start, you know, reflecting. I know it's a privilege to say that, because sometimes you don't have that time in life where you can just, you know, chill and relax for a little bit and try to think things through and, you know, and reimagine your life.
A lot of time we do have this time, but we're just too scared, I believe, to just pause and reevaluate.
Exactly. Because it's so necessary. It really is. So you do have to seize the opportunity when it's there, you know, to, as you very much stated, to pause, to reevaluate, to assess, and to decide what you want to do next. I mean, I was still young. So I still had plenty of time. I still do today, but still before. So I really wanted to pause, and I really wanted to know what I wanted to do. And I started having conversations with a lot of the people I interacted with, a lot of my friends, a lot of people who knew me and who knew what I was about. And a very good friend of mine at the time said to me, "But Mona, you really should create your own thing. You know, you may not feel that you are business driven, or that this is for you, but I think you should really be your own boss at this point." And you know, she said it once, she said it twice, and you know, at first I was like, I'm not a business owner. I'm not an entrepreneur. I'm not the CEO of anything. I don't believe I have this sort of savvy at this expertise. Mm-hmm. Not to say that I want to work for somebody or that I can only do that. But just to say that I don't know what my business would be like. What would be my business model? What would I be selling? And I had this very sort of limited idea of what a business could be. For me, having a business was selling something, right? And I was like, I don't have anything to sell. So what are you talking about? And then the more we sort of talked and you know, had conversation with lots of people, I was very fortunate when I was in Jamaica to meet with extraordinary women drawn to. So I learned a lot from these women, a lot from these women. And of course a few men too, I have to say that. And of course I would, you know, I would really interact with lots of artists and performers. I would go to every single event that had to do with arts, and be it exhibitions and, you know, and concerts and festivals. And so I was very much in that sphere, the same way that I was in Paris, or, you know, that I had been in other places in the world, but I was very much in that sphere. So slowly but surely, this idea of perhaps having a place that would be a sort of, not just a safe space for artists or people who were in the arts, but also a place where their work would be promoted in a way that was slightly different from what we used to see, and more importantly, that would be more international. Because one of the limits of the island is that a lot of it happens on the island, right? Mm-hmm. Everything happens in Jamaica. And a few are able to become those international superstars or whatever, but just a few. A lot of them, and it's often very much related to music. Outside of music, if you take the visual arts, you know, if you take dance or whatever, you don't really hear much from Jamaica. It's sports and music. Mm. And I kind of wanted to narrative.
When it comes to people of African descent.
Absolutely.
We usually hear about the greatest musicians, the greatest athletes, and that's it. Yeah.
Exactly. Imagine when it's also very much, it's much smaller, right? Because I mean, if you look at the African continent, it's a continent, right? Mm. So there's a lot
huge.
Huge. There's a lot more to look at. I mean, we have fashion, for example. Mm. But also, one of the things I realize is that maybe also, if we also sort of have this introspective, you know, behavior and look at ourselves, we also see that the way we promote ourselves mm-hmm. is often through the prism of what is expected of us, mm-hmm. right? As opposed to what we actually have to offer. Yes. And so for me, I felt that a lot of those artists and performers that I saw in Jamaica who were immensely talented and that the world could completely benefit from did not necessarily know how to promote themselves in a way that would make them the international figures that I felt they ought to be. And yeah. so there was this sort of disconnect. And I really felt that it was important to perhaps start looking into that. Now, the interesting thing is, of course, you know, through the work that I had done, I had worked in communication and, you know, in strategy and counsel and consulting mm-hmm. felt very, you know, comfortable to me. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't a branding specialist or a marketing specialist at all. That wasn't my background, not the least. I was much more of a researcher and a field worker in the sense of I do the research and once I have, you know, the numbers and the facts in mind, then I can do the work. I can mm-hmm. tackle it. So I felt that I had an interesting idea, but I certainly needed to surround myself with people who would be experts at other things. And this is how I kind of became this idea. The friend that had pushed me to really consider having my own business was like, mm-hmm. all right, well, I can help you with that. I'm very good with this. So let's try. And so we started really talking about it and partnering and thinking about a name. And, you know, we felt that Aya was beautiful because Aya is an Adinkra symbol. Adinkra is Ghanaian. Mm-hmm. It's Ashanti. And Aya is the fern, and it means resilience and resourcefulness, and it's also a feminine symbol. Mm-hmm. And so we loved the idea of being this group of women who could come up with ideas, right? Who would be a sort of actionable think tank for mm-hmm. arts, you know, for the arts, for artists, for art practitioners, for people who are in that sphere. Yeah. And that's how it became a reality. And because she was so savvy and also very convincing, you know, I was like, all right, let's have this. Yay, you know, I sort of had this template and I had those ideas and she was the very pragmatic person who was like, all right, let's do this first and let's do that and do-do-do and we need to register and we need to do this. And
wow, nice.
She really had businesses as well, so she knew what the model, she didn't know what the model was, but she mm-hmm. knew how to turn that into a reality, right? Yeah. I was very much in my head. I was very theoretical and she was very practical. So that was cool. That we, even though we started as partners, we eventually, you know, went our separate ways because, and that's the important thing about businesses and about being an entrepreneur, I think. And that's what I learned, sort of the hard way, but it was good. It's good as well. I learned that I, even though I was founding this business, this was not going to be your typical business. And that for me was very important. Mm-hmm. I wanted to take on projects that I believed in. I wanted to choose my projects wisely. And I also very much knew that to invest for the first few years of the business was more important than to actually earn money. Yeah. Because you needed to create trust. You needed to mm-hmm. meet people. You needed to go to them. And that takes time. And so I was in for the long ride. I wasn't in for the quick fix, the quick mm-hmm. money making thing. Mm-hmm. While she was more into, let's let's make money quickly, mm-hmm. because that's mm-hmm. how business, that's how businesses rise and how they sustain. But I think that that can be the case if you're selling a product. Mm-hmm. When you're selling a service, mm-hmm. it's slightly different. Mm-hmm. And so this is why we sort of parted ways, because we just didn't have the same understanding of what we wanted to do, and how we, not necessarily of what we wanted to do, but how we wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And I realized that the vision that I had, only I could carry that vision. Mm-hmm. Whether it's good or not, it's not to say that her vision wasn't good, but it wasn't mine. And I needed to make sure that the vision I carried was mine, and mine alone, because I knew what I wanted to achieve, and I knew how I wanted to achieve it, and I knew that I was going to have to be patient. Mm-hmm. It wasn't going to be this, you know, quick money, major money quickly type
of edge. And talking about that, was it, how did you start like earning money? When did you start earning money from Aya Consulting? Was it a straightforward path? I mean, from when you decided to part away from your friend mm-hmm. and do your own thing? Because I think there's something we don't really talk a lot about. The failures and the disappointment. Yes. I mean, we see the finished product, we see the beautiful website, we go to the nice events, yes. and everything around, but at the end, we don't know a lot about the process. No. That's something I'm really interested about.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're absolutely right. Oh no, it's a journey. It's a journey because you're right. The question is, you know, you can have the best idea. Like literally, you can have a great idea, if not the best, but you can have a great idea and people are going to love it, etc. But at some point or another, you're going to have to, you know, monetize that idea. Mm-hmm. and you're also going to need money to continue doing what you love and what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And financial stability is important at any given point in time. Even more so when you, I believe, when you have a family and you have people who that you need to support, but also when you're on your own, because you still need money to do things, right? Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a straightforward path at all. One of the major projects that we did, so I would say this, the way that Aya was designed and is designed, and will be designed in the future, is that we really have two arms. One that is about creating visibility around creativity from creative professionals who are from Africa, the Caribbean, and the diaspora. Mm-hmm. That's one arm. And then the other arm is client-driven work, the work that we do for specific clients. And so sometimes our name appears, and so people know that we've worked with so-and-so, and sometimes it doesn't because we're really behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And that's the good thing. That's a really good thing. You know, when we're working with a client on branding or marketing mm-hmm. strategies, you don't necessarily need to know that we're behind that. Mm-hmm. What's important for the client is that the, you know, the image or the product or whatever it is that they want to promote is done properly. And so there's a visible arm of Aya and then a more invisible arm, a behind-the-scenes mm-hmm. arm. It's the behind-the-scenes arm that allows us to live and to sustain, because obviously our clients pay for the work that we do, for the expertise that we have, and for what we're able to provide them with. But the visible arm of Aya, the one where we organize events, you know, produce master classes, sponsor films, mm-hmm. Is also very important because it also reflects our politics, I would want to say. It reflects the type of work that we believe in, that we support, and that we do. So they're complementary. But that arm obviously is much more of an investment for Aya. Yeah. And so even if some of the events can be paid events and some of what we do have, is monetized, at the same time, that's not where we earn the most. Yeah. But this particular model is not a typical one. And it's not one that a lot of investors or a lot of banks sort of trust, especially in the West. And in the West, I mean in Europe, because the United States is a different story. People are a lot bolder and a lot more audacious. Mm-hmm. And they are a lot more comfortable with those, with this kind of a model. But in Europe, for instance, it's very scary. Mm-hmm. Because people want to see a return on investment before they invest in you. Mm-hmm. Which is the paradox, because what you're trying to tell them is that, no, I want you to trust me that there will be a return, but I don't have the return yet. Yeah. So that's the complexity of having this particular business model, and this is why those two arms are so important. Because if we don't have clients, if we're not able to make that money that we can then reinject in the projects that we want to launch to become mm-hmm. more visible, then it creates a sort of imbalance. But those times of imbalances when there are no clients exist. Mm-hmm. Of course they exist. Because even though a lot of the clients that we have for a certain period of time, it's never 1 week or 2 weeks, it's oftentimes months at a time, because you really mm-hmm. want to expand that time and you want to do work sustainably. Sometimes then, you know, once the contract is over, then it's over and you have to find somebody else. Mm-hmm. Or somebody else has to find you, which I think is also one of the biggest challenges for a lot of consulting firms or creative firms, you know, or consultancies in general, is that you can publicize or advertise what you do, but oftentimes what happens is that people find you. When mm-hmm. they need you, they will find you. But you can call out, you know, and market yourself and network and da-da-da, and you will not get a call. So you have to trust, and you have to continue. What I'm learning, I'm a fairly young entrepreneur, and so I don't believe I have all the answers and all the advice. And, you know, I'm still very much learning this. But what I'm learning more and more is that you have to trust that what you're doing is meaningful and significant, and that people will find you. Mm-hmm. That of course you have to put the work out there and you have to be professional and you have to be consistent, but people will find you. And that's the way it works. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes when it does, people will come to you, they will all come at the same time. You know, and sometimes it's just like, for me, the best analogy is like phone calls. You know, when sometimes you're like, oh wow, my phone hasn't rung in like an hour or 2 hours. And you're like, oh, fuck me, like nobody's thinking of me. And then, you know, you've just said that, and then everybody starts texting you and calling you.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, all right guys, what is this? Yeah. I think it's the same thing. There's something about this law, this social law, this human law, where there is attraction and repulsion, and you know, that is very much true. And so for me, the most important thing that I can tell myself every single day, because there isn't a day that passes where I'm like, have I really decided? You know, was this the best decision I made in my life?
Yeah.
Should I have done something different here?
You know, do you often ask yourself this question?
Of course, every single day. Mm. Every single day. Every single day I ask myself, okay, is this really what I'm supposed to be doing? Mm. Should I continue with this? And every single day, and so far it's been the case, and it's been 6 years, I tell myself, yeah. But that doesn't mean that I don't completely shut myself off to other possibilities and opportunities. On the contrary, you know, when I left Jamaica and continued with AYA and I moved to Africa, I was also working as a senior consultant for an international organization at the same time. So I was doing both at the same time. Mm-hmm. I've only started really focusing on AYA alone in 2017.
Oh, so, wow.
Yes.
So, 7 years.
Exactly. So just to say that, you know, as you build your business, it doesn't mean that you cannot do other things. It's all about how you want to organize your time, what you want to prioritize, what makes more sense at some point or another. And I think you have to be flexible as well. If things are not working out at a particular time, don't get stuck on it. Try to find other solutions as well, right? And that's the beauty about consultancies, is that you're the one who decides what project you want to take on, how you want to do it, how much time you need to do it, etc. But my decision in 2017 was that I want to focus on AYA, because if I want to do this very well, then I need to think of that only. And also because the life that I'm able to create for myself and my loved ones is important. And the life that I want to create requires me to work in my own terms. And so it made sense at that point to say, okay, it's going to be AYA alone. I can't do too many things at the same time. And so just to say and to sort of answer your question, for me, trust is important. Trust in yourself, trust in what you do. And so every day when I ask myself, okay, here we go again. So am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the wrong thing? Then the answer is, I am. This is what I love. This is what I want. This is what I want to be able to leave as legacy. I don't know for how long. It may not work out in the end, but I want to do it as long as I can.